We're told that dancing was enjoyed by almost everyone in America during the Civil War, North and South, young and old, rich and poor, urban and rural. During the 1860s, a ball was one way to forget, but at least for an evening, the fiery trial of the Civil War. Unlike modern dancing that is couple-oriented, dancing in this era was much more social. Most dances were done in the open position, couples standing side by side, in formations of circles, squares, or lines, with a couple interacting with other couples. Closed position dances like the waltz and polka were considered scandalous in some communities and were generally done by young people and the urban fashionable upper classes. In fact, there were sermons preached like this one. Not only are dancing and junketing in bad taste at such a time as the present, but they are inhumanly disrespectful and foolish. If a father or a brother lay in mortal peril in an upper chamber, would it not be brutal in his children to be cutting the pigeon wing below stairs? Hundreds and hundreds of fathers and brothers are languishing in the hospitals of this very city, and thousands upon thousands of fathers, sons, husbands, and lovers are exposing their lives in the field to save us from subjugation. And here we are, protected by the living wall of their dauntless breasts, kicking up our heels and tripping on the light, fantastic toe in the most joyous manner. This is not the way to show a decent respect or a merely human sympathy for our suffering defenders. This is not the temper which will or ought to save a people from conquest. Far be it from us to arouse needless fears or to repress innocent amusements. Properly guarded, dancing is a delightful, healthful pastime, infinitely better than the dry and dreary reunions where only conversations, half-scandal, and whole nonsense is allowed. But if we must dance, let us confine ourselves to the old-fashioned, decent, and respectable dances, the cotillion and the like. Heaven save us from the round dances, as they are called, the loathsome products of a prurient French taste. We regret extremely to hear that these round dances are becoming all the rage at fashionable parties and at the big hops at the great hotels. Words cannot express our detestation and abhorrence of these dances. That from a lay sermon published in the Richmond Whig and the Philadelphia Inquirer in 1863 and shared by the Victorian Dance Ensemble. We're hearing music that was played for dancing, that thought naughty and that thought nice, during the Civil War by the esteemed historical music ensemble Spare Parts, a group that has spent decades performing dances of that period and other times, all rooted in extensive research and supported by their deep passion for what they do. Bill Matheson and Liz Stell will return to Scranton for the 14th Annual Civil War Ball on Saturday evening, April 14th, at the Century Club. And we had a chance to speak with them by phone about Spare Parts and the music they play.
We've been playing for more than 30 years. We were originally dancers, and I think that we're unusual as musicians to have started out like that. So we do vintage dance as well as other types of dance. And we've played over the last 30 years hundreds of dance events, and we also play for contra dances, mostly waltz events, in addition to these historic events. And Spare Parts as a name, we played for a benefit one time with just another pickup musician, and they asked for a band name, and we thought, okay, well, here's our fiddler tonight. And as that's worked out over the years, we've played with different violinists and other musicians as we travel around the country and do stuff. Sometimes it's easy if you're in Seattle to play with somebody local rather than flying an extra person out there with you. So that's the genesis of our band name.
And the genesis of playing for historic dance, we love all kinds of dance and had been dancing at these events. And we played for two benefits. One was for a local contra dance group. I was already in a contra dance band at that time. And then, unfortunately, a member of the vintage dance community lost her husband. So we decided to play a benefit for her. And so we didn't quite have the repertoire, but we pulled it all together and talked a violinist into playing with us. So we started our path as historic dance musicians by playing a benefit, and then we realized we loved playing the music as much as we loved dancing, and it just took off from there.
Let's turn back the hands of time, even before those pivotal events. How about music in each of your lives? How did you come to play music? Were you little ones in school with instruments?
Well, I started when I was in third grade playing piano, which now at 70 years old means I've been playing a long time. So that was that. And then I played flute in the grade school band. And then the folk era got into playing, you know, guitar and a little bit of banjo. But really, piano is my main instrument. And for Liz?
I started sort of the same way, piano in third grade, and then flute in the band. And I come from a family where music was always a hobby. My father sang in the choir for 50 years, so it was definitely a hobby for me. And then the Berkshires were a little sleepier when I first got here in the late 70s. And some friends of mine had a party and started playing some music. And I said, oh, I can play this music. And we formed a contra dance band and started playing for dances, but it was a little bit sleepy to start. And I was an enthusiastic musician, but Bill has always been a really gifted musician. And so when the two of us got together as a couple, my musicianship increased greatly. And he would get me to play with people I was too shy to play with, but that's how you get better. So we really grew through playing contra dances at first, and then this historic dance music it's just a really fun middle ground between classical and fiddle tunes. So we just fell in love with it, and also with playing Argentine tangos, which is a sideline of ours.
That's wonderful. In the decades, then, have you had a chance and the interest to learn more and more about the history of this dancing in our country, or perhaps roots or antecedents?
Yeah, that's definitely another thing that makes us unusual, because we really, as musicians, we do our own historic music research. We have a huge collection of dance music from the 1700s to the 1930s, you know, more than 10,000 pieces.
Some of those are original, some of those are photocopies that dance historians have gotten for us, so it's a mix.
So Jane Austen era, which is early 1800s, mid-century Civil War stuff, late-century Belle Epoque, ragtime, which is early 20th century, and then several thousand of these pre-World War I Argentine tangos. So yeah, we've really, and of course the different dances that people did over that period of time, there's a huge number of things, redowas and polkas and Scotch reels and so all of those things, it's been very, very interesting, the history part, and we've been really serious about it in terms of doing, you know, authentic tunes from the period and all of that, and then matching the dance reconstructions that people have done.
And how about dressing for the parts as the eras shift? Do you dress accordingly?
Oh yeah, we got the outfits, and that's one of the things that's really different about the vintage dance crowd, is they really enjoy having the gowns from the 1890s or the 1860s or the, you know, 1820s, and so, yeah, we have outfits, particularly Liz has gorgeous gowns, you know, reconstructed from all these periods, and I think it's one of the things that, the dancers wouldn't make us do this, but I think it's one of the things that makes them particularly fond of us, is that we dress the part, you know, whatever the era is, so the people up on the stage are not in 20th century clothes, you know, we're wearing the real deal, and the guys get away pretty easily, but I think for Liz's ball gowns, they're spectacular. I mean, they're just really, really nice.
I even grew my hair long so I could put it up, and I'm not gifted in the hair arranging, so that was a learning curve for me.
Have you gone to the vintage clothing shops? Have you had people make things?
That's how we started. My first dress as a dancer was about a 1950 prom gown of my mother's, but that was strapless, so I had to wear a jacket over it. But the hoops were the wrong shape in the 50s, so I learned that. But it was long and it was formal, and everybody 30 years ago, everybody was faking it, you know, pulling together what they could manage. And that's one really fun thing over the past 30 years, is to see people get seriously interested in researching the clothing. And so now the dances are like movie sets. They used to be a little more hodgepodge, but now they're just beautiful outfits and quite wonderful. I'm not a gifted sewer, and I'm a little nervous about working with silk, so I know who to go to, someone who outfits other serious dancers, so I trust her to keep me in the right period, so that's kind of fun.
You mentioned movie sets, and our listeners who might not be familiar with the historic dances, what would you suggest in terms of movies they might call to mind when we talk about dancing of any sort that you play for?
course, for the ragtime era, the Sting would be a good one, and that's something that everybody's seen. Just for the costumes, some of the British things that the BBC puts out are pretty nice.
The Age of Innocence is the perfect one for Belle Epoque era, because they were very careful with the costumes. The more recent Jane Austen movies, they've gotten more careful with the costumes. Gone with the Wind, they weren't costume historians when they did the movie, but certainly that's what people are familiar with if they think of Civil War era balls.
And for recent stuff, a couple of things that our music has actually been used in. One was this television series on PBS called Mercy Street, where they had a couple of seasons of that set in the Civil War, and they had some dance scenes in that where our music was used, and you see the outfits. And there's the dance scenes in the house where they have the different officers downstairs, and they're plotting about this and talking about that. And meanwhile, in the background, people are doing some dances. Another one was a Jane Campion movie. She's from Australia. She made a movie about the life of the poet Keats, which is kind of Regency era. And boy, his girlfriend was a seamstress. And they must have 35 different outfits that show up every time she comes on camera. She's got a different outfit, and they're amazing. So that's a fun one. You just kind of have to kind of look and see. But
it's a little harder to track down, but it's a great movie.
How about the teaching of the dances?
Yes, we were very fortunate early on to work with several dance historians. Patrick Pugliese of Boston, he's no longer with us, but he was a reenactor himself, and he really wanted to sort of raise the level of dancing and just reenacting in general. His group, the Commonwealth Vintage Dancers, through some of the early events, they were into costumes really early on, and they supported our music. They paid us to record music for them to perform to so they could own their own recordings. And he came up with this idea of a ball in a box, which was a cassette originally, but doing a recording of a condensed version of a ball so that people who'd never heard dance music before could get a sense of how to give music a dance feeling and what would be on the ball card. So he really helped us with the idea of the Civil War ballroom recording, and then he worked with us to make sure we got the tempos right and helped us pick, since we didn't have enough time on a cassette for a two-hour ball or two-and-a-half-hour ball. He figured out how to shorten some of the dances. So he was really a great support. And that recording led to a music book for bands, the Civil War Ballroom Band Book. We started this before he passed away, editing his dance manual that he wrote for calling the dances. So we published that in a little sort of a pocket version to make it look like an old dance manual. And then as he was failing, he was still able, I believe he danced mazurka certainly a month before he died, and he was really dancing up until the last minute. So Bill, who also does video, recorded Petri and Barbara doing some of the couples' dances so that people, because you can't learn those from, it's hard to learn those from reading instructions on a piece of paper. So there's also a DVD showing how to do the couples' dances of the era. So really, Patrick got us started on trying to develop materials for other bands, other reenactment groups, so that they could do this for themselves. And then we worked with another dance historian on our Regency Ballroom CD there again to get the tempos right, to get the right mix of dances.
You described, as we started, the fact that one of the things that distinguishes you as a band is the fact that you were dancers first, so you do have that sensibility. So when you're in a ball situation, you can be in the moment and help the dancers. Would there be an energy in the room that you adapt to?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if they're often walking people through the dances before they do them. They wouldn't necessarily do that with a waltz or a polka, but you know, all of the line dances and the circle dances and everything, they're walking those through. So we get a chance to see, well, let's see, gee, there's a lot of beginners in this crowd, or the floor looks a little bit slippery, or gee, it's really hot tonight, maybe we should keep the tempos a little slower. So even before they start dancing, we're sort of vibing out as dancers and looking and watching, seeing what's happening. And then when we actually do the dances, and I got to say that stuff also affects the tune selection. Like, for example, if we're doing Civil War, I think Liz was the one who noticed that if we played tunes that everybody knew in the beginning, the dancers, especially the guys who aren't necessarily as good as the women dancing, really get in they find it much easier to dance if you're playing, you know, Darling Nellie Gray or Camptown Races or something that they're familiar with already, as opposed to some obscure tune that they've never heard. So
I'm going to add one bit to that. Specifically, often, especially in the early reenactment dances, the guys just weren't necessarily dancers, but they had a lot of experience marching to Civil War marches. And we noticed that if we played, there's some very notey tunes at this era that were popular, but if we played a Civil War march, suddenly these kind of klutzy guys who couldn't get their feet together, when they hear a Civil War march, their feet know exactly what to do. So suddenly they started looking like dancers because their feet knew the music, and they could pay attention to, do I go left now or do I go right, because their feet were in the right place. So by watching the dancers, we learned that, oh, if they're beginners, we play a march that they might recognize. And if they're Civil War reenactors, we definitely play a Civil War tune that their feet already know how to dance to.
I have to say, too, that anytime you do anything that's a recreation of something earlier, there's always this temptation to kind of get stiff and not really see the big picture. And so when we pick our music, we try to not only just pick old music, which sometimes is not that interesting, we try to pick old music that's really pretty. We have to play it many times over the years. They have to listen to it and dance to it. We want them to have fun, so we're pretty picky. It's got to jump through a lot of hoops for us to work. You know, it has to be the right tempo, the right pattern. It has to be really from that period. And it also has to be pretty and fun.
Pretty or perky.
And perky, yeah. Perky will be good. And, yeah, I think that really makes people have a good time. They really feel like that they are recreating that era. You know, when you go back to the 1920s, there's films and things and recordings, but if you're in the 19th century, there's nothing. You can't, you know, you can see a drawing that somebody made of a ballroom, but there's no way you can actually hear how the music sounded or what the people looked like, and so you're creating an era based on trying to keep that in mind, that, you know, people back then wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun. So you've got to make this stuff fun. So it's not that easy to come up with the whole mix. There's certainly some other dance genres that are much more forgiving in terms of, like, if you played a swing dance, you'd have your choice of 1,000 tunes and any of them would work, you know, but for these other eras, it's a little more complicated.
And you use the word fun there, Bill, and people can come to these balls and dances just to have fun, but is it exhilarating for you all to do this creation of a space which might put people physically in mind, even if it's just their imaginations, of what it might have been like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's like time travel for us, too. It's like stepping into a movie set, especially if the dancers are having a good time. They give off energy, and we, you know, there's a feedback loop. We start having more fun, they start having more fun. But I have worked at history museums in the past, so I have a fondness for history, and living history is the best.
There is this funny thing that I always feel a little odd talking about it, you know, because I can't explain how it works, but with any of these dance music, there is a, like Liz said, there is a connection that you get from the floor, and you're playing and you're looking at the dancers, and there's nothing really that you can pin down that tells you specifically when you're in the groove with the dancers and vice versa, but you can feel it as a musician and you can feel it as a dancer, and it's kind of a magic thing that's pretty addictive. I mean, that's what we're trying to get. It's like communicating, you know. You can.
It is a conversation of sorts. It's just a nonverbal one.
So similar to talking with somebody, you can tell if their mind is someplace else, or if you're really having a meeting of minds. And somehow, even though it's nonverbal, it's similar with dance, and that's why we do it. That's the reward.
Also, there's a really nice community of dancers. The woman who prompts the Scranton event, we've known her for, I think, 30 years. So she's an old friend, and she's just one of the best. We just finished playing for the group in Boston, the one that Patrick Pugliese helped to start, and we just did our 25th Civil War ball for them. The Scranton event hasn't been going quite so long, but it's also been going for a good long time. Some people change. There are young people at the Boston event now, which is fun. But there's also people that we've been doing this with for 30 years. So there's a very nice and a very welcoming community that contributes to our fun.
And sometimes at the Scranton event, when you've done the Civil War ball, you switch
your costumes the next day and you do fun things brunch-like. Is that something that's in the offing?
Yeah, we're gonna do that again, the ragtime period, which people just love for the outfits and also for the dances.
The ragtime era is fun because the melodies are a little more involved. More of the melodies are more involved. I got introduced to ragtime era music through Looney Tune cartoons in my childhood, and I think that's one reason I'm so fond of them.
That's a really fun period for us, too, and it's more couple dances as opposed to group, like a line dance or like a contra dance or a square or something. And the ragtime event is in the beautiful hotel, the former train station, which is just gorgeous.
The Lackawanna Station Hotel is a very beautiful place to play music or to have an event.
The staff there really like to see us come back every year. They love hearing the great music in that space. So that's a lot of fun, and that also draws a bunch of people who are maybe not going to dance, but they just want to be there, have something to eat, enjoy the ambiance, and see everybody in their outfits. And so it's a really fun group, fun event.
We get nice comments about the music on that from some of the non-dancers. They want to know what this music is because it's not swing music. If we say The Sting, they'll recognize that, but it's not Scott Joplin, which is the ragtime some people know, but Scott Joplin thought he was writing concert music, not dance music. So it's just a different genre for many people, and it's fun, it's good times music, so it's perfect for a brunch, and people really like it.
Well, and I want to mention our website, too, if people want to get a preview. Our group name, again, is Spare Parts, one word, and the website is www.b-as-in-bill-f-as-in-frank-v-as-in-victor.com/spareparts, and then you'll see our schedule of events and books and CDs and everything, the whole deal.
Bill Matheson and Liz Stell of Spare Parts speaking with us in anticipation of the annual Civil War weekend in downtown Scranton. They will play for the Grand Civil War Ball at the Century Club, 612 Jefferson Avenue. Doors open at 7, dancing begins at 8, and that's Saturday, April 14th. Saturday, April 14th. The next day, Sunday, April 15th, it's a ragtime brunch and tea dance at the Radisson Lackawanna Station Hotel from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's all hosted by the Lackawanna Historical Society and the Confederation of Union Generals. It's the 14th annual Grand Civil War Ball in downtown Scranton, Saturday, April 14th at the Century Club, 612 Jefferson Avenue in Scranton. Music by Spare Parts, prompting by Martha Griffin. Doors open at 7, dancing begins at 8, followed the next day at 11 in the morning by a ragtime brunch and tea dance. For more information on the web, ScrantonCivilWarDay.com, ScrantonCivilWarDay.com. Jen Ockman is a veteran dancer, instructor, reenactor, and coordinator for the Lackawanna Historical Society of the Grand Civil War Ball, and she fills us in on all the details for the weekend.
We have a whole weekend, actually, worth of events this year. We've sort of expanded, and this year we have a special dinner. This is not affiliated with the Historical Society. It's with the Mary Stegmeyer Mansion in Wilkes-Barre. We're doing a Friday evening Titanic dinner. That's Friday, April 13th. It's a full dinner with a cash bar, dancing to recorded music. Maybe next year we'll get Spare Parts to come and start off our weekend in high style. But we'll be having a Titanic-themed dinner at the Mary Stegmeyer Mansion. And you can find information about that on the Mary Stegmeyer Mansion's website. And if you are interested in tickets, you need to call Maureen at 570-332-4250, and she can give people all the information. And it starts at 7 p.m. on Friday the 13th. So we can start our whole weekend off in style, and then of course the fun continues. Saturday, actually, this year, we've also got something else new this year. We're going to be doing a vintage accessory sale at the Historical Society on Saturday afternoon. That runs from noon to 2 at the Catlin House. That's the home of the Lackawanna Historical Society, who, of course, is sponsoring all of this. And that's at 232 Monroe Avenue. So we'll have a selection of deaccessioned vintage accessories that we're going to be putting out that you can purchase. we will not be doing the dance lessons in the afternoon this year. We usually do a Saturday afternoon dance lesson. We have decided this year we're going to be running special 2 vintage dance lessons a few weeks before the ball, actually. About 10 years ago, we did a series, about a 3-week series of dance lessons for people to get them ready for the ball. And ever since we did that, people have asked us every year, when are you going to do those again? So this year we have decided, instead of doing the Saturday afternoon lesson, we're going to do 2 vintage dance lessons. They're going to be on Wednesdays. The first one is Wednesday, March 28th, next Wednesday. The second one is on Wednesday, April 4th. They are being held at the Leonard Theater, which is 335 Adams Avenue. They'll be at 7 p.m. They'll run from 7 to 9. You can pay at the door, or you can also purchase the dance lessons on the website. And, of course, we always want people to check out the website. There's so much information, more than I can even talk about, and it's all on our website, ScrantonCivilWarDay.com. That's all one word, ScrantonCivilWarDay.com. So we'll be doing those dance lessons a few weeks prior to the ball. The ball itself this year is on Saturday, April 14th. It's at the Century Club, 612 Jefferson Avenue. Spare Parts, of course, will be doing the music. Our dance mistress is Martha Griffin, so she helps you work your way through the dances. There'll be group dances and couple dances, and she will be directing everything. So don't have any worries, even if you can't make our dance lessons, although we hope you come to the dance lessons. Doors open at 7. Dancing begins promptly at 8. We provide some light refreshments. You can purchase ball tickets on the website. We've got PayPal buttons now, so we're all in the 21st century, and it makes it very easy to get all your tickets for the entire weekend. And, of course, we're not done after Saturday. We have everybody come back, the band comes back, and we have our ragtime brunch and tea dance on Sunday, April 15th. That runs 11 to 2 at the Radisson Lackawanna Station Hotel. So what happens is they have that beautiful Sunday brunch, and the band will be right there in the lobby by the fountain. And what we'll be doing, we'll eat a little bit, get up and dance a little bit, eat a little bit, get up and dance a little bit. So we've got a full weekend of events this year, so there's plenty to do and check out.
And you always make us feel so welcome and not like we have 2 left feet if we don't think of ourselves as a dancer.
Well, we aim to please. The idea is that it's not Dancing with the Stars. I always tell people we're here to have fun. And people, of course, always ask me, well, I'd love to come. I have a friend right now who's badgering me. He wants to come with his girlfriend, but they don't want to get dressed up in a costume. And that is not a requirement. You do not have to have an 1860s Gone with the Wind type of costume, although if you want to, you're more than welcome. But modern formal wear is really all we ask for. Cocktail dress for the ladies, a nice suit for the gentlemen. Please don't come in jeans, shorts, that sort of thing. We are sort of being a little bit formal. But please don't feel, if you don't have a costume or you do not want to wear a costume, please don't let that keep you from coming and enjoying this very welcoming Civil War ball with wonderful live music. It's a nice way to enjoy history. We like to say that history is not something boring and dry and things that you left behind in the schoolroom, but it can be a lot of fun to sort of immerse yourself in that world for just a little while. These days, of course, we have all kinds of troubles, and it's nice sometimes to leave that behind and enjoy ourselves for a little bit. And this whole weekend is about enjoying ourselves. It's about supporting the Lackawanna Historical Society. It's about enjoying all the history that downtown Scranton and Wilkes-Barre has to offer, and hopefully welcoming spring.
Jen Ockman, who is coordinating the Grand Civil War Ball for the Lackawanna Historical Society, speaking with us about the weekend in Scranton and that's April 14th and 15th with the Grand Civil War Ball number 14, the 14th annual, at the Century Club on Saturday, April 14th, 612 Jefferson Avenue. Music by Spare Parts, prompting by Martha Griffin. She'll teach all the dances. The doors open at 7, dancing begins at 8. Light refreshments will be provided. Tickets available at the door or online. And that website is ScrantonCivilWarDay.com. ScrantonCivilWarDay.com. The next day, Sunday, April 15th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., it's the Ragtime Brunch and Tea Dance with Spare Parts at the Radisson Lackawanna Station Hotel in downtown Scranton. Again, those tickets available on the website. New this year, local vintage dance lessons, Wednesdays, March 28th and April 4th, from 7 to 9 at the Leonard Theatre, 335 Adams Avenue in Scranton. You don't need to attend, but it would enhance your enjoyment of the event if you can attend. And that's ScrantonCivilWarDay.com. There will be a vintage clothing and accessories event on Saturday, April 14th, from noon to 2 at the Catlin House, the home of the Lackawanna Historical Society, 232 Monroe Avenue in Scranton. And on Friday evening, a Titanic dinner in downtown Wilkes-Barre on South Franklin Street at the historic Mary Stegmeyer Mansion. For more information on the web, ScrantonCivilWarDay.com, ScrantonCivilWarDay.com, or the StegmeyerMansion.com, StegmeyerMansion.com.